Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
This is an example of why we do not put each other on pedestals. No one's above anybody in this hip hop culture. We're all equal because we all do the same thing.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a weekly podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sitaro. This is episode 173, a talk with TC Islam. TC is a DJ, MC, and producer who began his career as a teenager in the mid-1980s, releasing several singles on labels based out of his home state of Connecticut. But even back then, he was already an important member of the Zulu Nation, and eventually became a surrogate son, confidant, and musical collaborator of the organization's leader, Afrika Bambaataa. TC's main musical contribution is combining hip-hop with the dance music genre known as dubstep to create a unique hybrid he calls hipstep. Hipstep, which has its roots in both UK dance music and Bambaataa's early experiments with electro, takes the tempos and sounds of drum and bass, dubstep, jungle, and other dance genres, and brings them together with TC's inimitable rhymes and song concepts. The Zulu Nation, of course, has been rocked by scandal ever since a former member, Ronald B. Stinger Savage, came forward this past spring with allegations of sexual abuse against Bambaataa. We'll get to that, of course, and we'll also have an update on what is going on in that case since we spoke to TC this past summer. But we begin our conversation by talking about TC Islam's political side, the time he spent in New Haven acting as a liaison between the police force and communities of color. We talked to TC Islam at his home in the Bronx. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cipher as soon as it drops, subscribe on iTunes. Once you do that, you'll be able to check out our back catalog. If you enjoy this show, for example, you should listen to our interview with another key historical figure, Alaa B of the Nation of Gods and Earth, on episode 151. Also consider helping the show by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you a show every week takes a lot of time and effort from me and Josh, and we really need your support to continue to maintain this level of output. If even a quarter of our listeners contributed just $1 a month, it would go a long way towards making the show sustainable. As an added bonus for our patrons, we try monthly to share some bonus material that sometimes comes out when talking to our guests after the main interview is over. For November, we have some very special Wu-Tang Clan material coming your way, including a version of a RZA song that no one has ever heard before. Become a patron by October 31st to get access to the file. If you're curious about any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what we're up to on the air and in the wider world. And now, here's the original B-boy junglist D&B king, TC Islam. So I actually wanted to start off with something not musical. I was looking at an old issue of Parade magazine from 1994.
Parade magazine.
And it had an article about you and the police chief of New Haven and efforts you were working on to reduce youth violence. Can you tell me a little bit about those efforts and how they ended up in a national magazine you get with the Sunday paper?
Wow, you did your homework. At that time, I was starting the Zulu Nation chapter up in Connecticut. And my reasons for starting the chapter of Connecticut, I was working with starting an organization up there with a few other brothers and sisters up there called the Elm City Nation. And once I got that, you know, got them on their way, then I said, then even though, you know, people, you know, we came from the Zulu Nation, we came from being, you know, being a gang and all that, you know, back in the days, 70s. You know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, even though, you know, we blew up, you know, as far as, you know, musically and all that, there's still a side of us, man, that was always going bang. So with the Latin Kings, you know, things are getting pretty ugly back then, you know what I'm saying? And at the same time, we starting Zulu Nation up there, I started with the, you know, organization called the Host Organization down there. And at the time, there was up there in New Haven, there was a crew of, like, you know, really bad police officers that made the good police officers look really bad. And then we called the BDP, Beat Down Posse, by this asshole ex-cop, ex-detective, who's now locked up, you know what I'm saying, in prison, you know what I'm saying, for false incriminating brothers in the hood for years. And he got caught.
You remember his name offhand?
It was Officer Billy White.
The whole neighborhood screaming out dirty cops.
In 2007, Billy White, then 63, traded a guilty plea for a maximum of 48 months in prison as part of an ongoing New Haven police corruption scandal. After being on the force for 39 years, he was finally brought down when a Connecticut state trooper tipped off the FBI about White taking money from bail bondsmen while on the job. The FBI launched a sting that nabbed White. Thing eventually became known as the Estupido Caper after White wrote Estupido on a bag he stole $24,400 from, hoping to cover his tracks. Muy Estupido indeed.
And written the rest of his cronies. So at the time, when I started the Zulu chapter, we also were involved in the cable access up there. And, you know, we had a show called the Zulu Flavor Hut. You know what I'm saying? So we're like, yo, we got tired that when news media say some old messed up shit about brothers and sisters in the hood, yo, we giving the real news. We giving the other side. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, at the top of the news, man, da-da-da-da, then we're going to, we're giving you the real news. So a lot of people started tuning in. You know, at the time, you know, Nick Pastor, the police chief, I had approached him in a very diplomatic fashion. Because what was happening is that some of the police officers, they never put that in the media, that, you know, every time they touched, you know, a young brother, Latino, or black brother or sister in the hood, yo, there was a crew going to touch the cops. You know, before it really was going to really escalate to a real serious problem, you know, I sat down with Nick Pastor and me being a victim of police brutality. And it's really funny, ironic, that the cop that brutalized me when I was around, like, maybe 14, 15 years old, was that Officer Billy White. Isn't this how karma works, man? Mm-hmm. You know, I told the police chief, you know my feelings, man. Like, you know, like, look, man, you know, you got to get out here more in the street, man, see what your police is doing, man. And you know, so at that time, too, also ex-mayor DeStefano up there in New Haven, Connecticut, was running for mayor. And the Zulu Nation chapter, we put him in office up there.
After losing his first campaign for mayor of New Haven in 1989, John DeStefano Jr. won election in 1993. He served 10 consecutive terms, leaving office at the beginning of 2014.
When me and police chief, you know, Pastor, we were meeting, and he's one of my great friends, too. I miss Nick, you know what I mean? He's my dude. You know, and he was asking me, well, what do you think will help policing in the community? And I told him, I said, well, you know, when it comes to, you know, far as domestic violence, you know, far as in the hood, you know, you got different police officers coming to the scene every time there's a call. By the time that person gets killed, the man or the woman, it's going to be hard. The case has already got so many police officers on it. What you need to do is that the first officers that's on the scene, have them have pagers, give them pagers. So that victim, the next time it happens, they can call that police officer. Domestic violence dropped 47%.
Huh?
You know what I'm saying? Then, they had basically gave us the police cell station of theirs, headquarters. And I kept the headquarters open like almost 24 hours a day. And due to the Zulu Nation's far as involvement, you know, far as in the streets up there back then, you know, murder and murders and homicides and street crime dropped at least close to 49%. When you're doing work like that and you're not getting any, you're not, like, you know, doing like all the other community leaders and, you know, up the mayor's ass and shit, and every day at City Hall one budget money. You know, we didn't need that, you know, because, you know, even though a lot of the kids were in groups and cliques, outside of the Zulu Nation chapter, they were also, like, you know, trapping their money up. You know what I mean? So, you know, we really didn't need, we were self-sufficient, you know, through events and also through, you know, cats just donating money. You know, the Jewish rabbi, you know, board, you know, they used to send us a check, you know, for us every few months, man, you know, support of our functions. But, you know, like in any community, you know, in any city, you know, when you're activists and you're trying, you're striving to really sincerely do some good from the heart, that's when you hit the political bullshit. That's when you start seeing the jealousy and envy from other community leaders. And that's when you see the whole coup of people come together behind your back and to get you out the way so they can get political money from City Hall or for their future endeavors. And you know me, I've always been a big dreamer, you know what I mean? And always, like, you know, never go back on things. If I experience something, I keep moving forward to experience the next thing. Nick asked me when, he says, 60 Minutes is gonna interview me, and I would like for you to be interviewed. Well, fortunately for Nick, we were doing the Zulu Flavor Hood that day. So he came on the show, and we were interviewing him on the Zulu Flavor Hood while 60 Minutes was just interviewing him. And, you know, the producer for 60 Minutes, you know, he walked in and says, who's the producer of this show? And I said, I am. You know, we all are. And he says, hold up. You have kids working the board and working the cameras. And, yeah, we work everything. It's all youth-orientated. And he's blown away. And so after that, we got invited to it. Nick asked me, he says, would you come down to D.C. and to speak at the police consortium? So I'm like, what do you mean? It's going to be like all like the police chiefs from around the country is going to be there? He's like, yeah. So I'm like, nah, man, that's too many police for me, man. You know what I'm saying? And so I did it. You know, we flew down. And the funny part is when I was walking down the hall with Nick Pastore, I'm like, you know, I'm feeling kind of, I did no crime or anything, you know, but I'm walking down the hallway, man, like all these police chiefs are looking at me and they're shaking my hands, man. I'm looking at them and looking at me like they're making me feel like I did something and shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Nick was like, it's okay, you're good here. I'm like, man, there's a lot of police up in here, man. There's three police up in here for me, man. So due to a lot of communities around the country really don't know that, you know, the policing of community policing, internal, like, far as community policing, not the policing where they whooping your ass and all that. You know, Nick Pastore and myself, you know, we came up with a lot of that flow chart.
Wow.
And next thing you know, I guess we were in parade night.
Crazy. Wow. You know, taking it back even further for a minute, as far as I can tell, the first crew you were involved with, maybe as a teenager, early teens or something, was RS3.
Wow.
What kind of
Yo, Jay, he did his homework, V. Wow, you did your homework, the RS3.
Official, man.
Yo, you did your homework, son.
Yeah. You know how he is, so he interviewed me.
Yeah, you're the first, yo, you're the first interviewer in my entire life and career to ever ask me about that crew, man. The RS3, wow.
Whoa. Say, whoa.
He got me going back. He got me going back through, like, fragmented, like, you know, like files, man. Like, you know, the RS3, man. First of all, I'd like to say rest in power to the original MC Rockski. He died in an auto accident. And that crew was Mike Williams, who called himself, he's the original Boston Beat. Because he came from Boston in the early 80s. And and Rockski, we was like that. It's like, you know, the renowned sound MCs, you know what I'm saying? RS3, renowned sound. So when Rockski died, passed away, the Bon Kashim, the guard, the Bon Kashim from Queens, he had basically came and got down with us. And this was way before, like, it was like only labels that was out there, like Sugar Hill and Enjoy. And we were like every day, like after school, and like Rockski and Mike, they were like older than me, you know what I'm saying? So I was like a freshman. They were like juniors and seniors. You know, when Kashim got down, Nah, I put Gashin down because me and him hung every day. Because we were the guards, you know what I mean? So we was killing crews, man. Like back then, it was like up there in Connecticut, there was a Superior Crush. It was a lot of crews, man. Like Superior, but I'm talking about cats. I was like, could get down with the get down. Superior Crush, the Skinny Boys, Come Master Joey D.
Skinny Boys got a deal at some point, right?
Mommy, guess who I seen? The Skinny Boys.
Skinny Boys.
Skinny Boys. Skinny Boys. Skinny Boys. Skinny Boys. Wait.
The Skinny Boys released a well-regarded LP on Warlock Records in 1986 and were signed to Jive shortly thereafter. They released two albums on the larger label.
Yeah, and see, like, the way they got that deal is crazy because it was Jive Records was at Gulf Street Park up there that year. So me, Kashim, and Mike, you know, the RS3, you know what I'm saying? It was a certain cats, like they would rock. When they rock, they would, like, avoid us, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they come and perform at certain parties and all that, man, show and just be out. Because they know that the RS3 is coming, you know what I'm saying? They know me, Bon Kashim, and Boston Beat coming. Yo, why y'all avoiding us? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know? So it was Skinny Boys is rocking. You know what I'm saying? And we were next. The RS2 was next. And so soon as, like, they got off, they was about to bring us on, gunshots rang out. And it was like, oh, man. You know, we could have caught that deal right there, man. You know what I'm saying? And, then, you know, like any crew, you know, any hip-hop crew, you know what I'm saying, any band, you have problems with the girls. So what broke up the RS3... was like they wanted to be on like Def Jam and like that, you know what I'm saying? And so I'm like, well, yo, man, we should like start what we can get, man, you know what I'm saying? And move up, man, you know what I'm saying? Just get out there. So this cat named Tony Pearson, he basically approached me when I basically was performing at a high school for a show.
And that's, he was known as Mr. Magic, but not the New York Mr. Magic.
Yeah, guy. Exactly.
Check it out, y'all. Some people say Connecticut can't rock. But I'm here to make you all hip and hop. It's not about the rock. It's not about the freak. It's a brand new dance. We call it punk rock.
Tony, Mr. Magic Pearson, not to be confused with his New York-based contemporary, the influential DJ John Mr. Magic Rivas, was a Connecticut-based record store owner and a promoter who, after hearing Curtis Blow's Christmas Rappin', became determined to release the first ever rap record from Connecticut. The result was Rappin' with Mr. Magic, which he recorded in 1979 and released in 1980. Pearson would go on to found the labels Magic Records and Tri-State Records, the latter of which would release TC's first songs.
You know, he approached me, and I just got on stage, tore it up. You know, it's like, you know, and I was always known, in the street for like burning cats, man. So it was like, you know, he approached me and says, yo, man, you want to make a record, man? I'm like, no. Because, you know, I felt like, you know, I always wanted to be, like, it just may sound crazy and ironic, man. I never wanted to be like a big rap star or a big rap DJ, rap producer. I always wanted to be a grandmaster. I always wanted to contribute to hip-hop culture. I always wanted to be like, you know, in the underrated, you know what I'm saying, category. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, why strive to be something that's definitely not me? You know, it's like, you know, Kashim and Mike, you know, see, I'm hearing like, you know, they was like doing shows, you know what I'm saying, without me and doing my rhymes, you know, routines too, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, all right. So, you know, it was like when I brought them to meet Magic, you know what I'm saying? I guess like, you know, Mike and Magic and like Tony didn't get along, you know, they ain't hit it off. So they started doing their thing. And every day after school, you know what I'm saying, I'm like, you know, riding my bike to like, you know, Tony's crib, you know what I'm saying? We working on beats and all that and bass lines and, you know what I'm saying? I'm coming up with rhymes and all that to it, man. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, it worked out. It's like, it was kind of crazy for me because, you know, in a way, I really wish I didn't really make my first record because, you know, my first record took me to, like, you know, to where I'm at today and around, you know, and it was, and then, you know, like any kid, man, you know, you get caught up, you know what I'm saying, with the jealousy of those in the hood that's, you know, you're trying to get out. And, you know, you just got that riff-raff crew, man, you know what I'm saying? You know that, you know, your dudes and, you know, you're young, man, you know, you're 15 years old, 16 years old, man. So, you know, you coming into like, you know, I call it like, you know, the night we became men. You know, a murder, you know, a homicide that happened, you know, this cat that You know, you have your young best friends, you know what I'm saying? You know, but then you don't realize that that young best friend that you think is your best friend is really jealous of you, man. And, you know, that's what happened, man. He, you know, cat took my gun and killed somebody, man. You know what I'm saying? And that took me into, like, you know, to, like, you know, juvenile, you know, because I admitted to the judge, you know, the gun was mine. And, you know, and that was the like, you know, my introduction to, like, you know, well, you know, you got to do something with your life, man. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, if you hang with these dudes, man, you don't see these people, man, you're going to get in trouble, man, and mess everything up. So, you know, it's like, you know, it's no matter what I've done or been around the world, and this music has always been one foot in the street and one on the stage, man, you know?
Yeah. So when you go back and you listen to that first batch of songs, the ones you put out like 86, 87, do you ever go back and listen to them first off?
You know, it's crazy. I just recently, like this year, started to listen to those old records because I never really ever really talk about my early, you know, far as 80s hip hop career, because everybody thinks I started, you know, came out like in the 90s and 94 or something like that, which I'm like, thank you.
Right.
Like, thank you.
Not going to disabuse them of that.
You know what I'm saying? Thank you.
How do they sound to you? The you know,
it was hip hop. You know, that was, you know, me, I've always been into production. I was always into engineers. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I'll read the back of album covers, man. And I'm like, I'll look at, like, what engineers worked on this, man. Because the engineer never get no props, man. He's up all night, all the time with you, man. You knocked out smoking, drinking. He's up working, man. The engineer gets no props, man. So, you know, I've been fortunate, man, to work with some of, like, the greatest engineers you can even, like, even so, like, you know, rest in peace. You know, I didn't get a chance to work with him, but, you know, for him to, like, you know, to open his heart and his mind to me, man, the late Roger Nichols, man, you know, Steely Dan, man, you know what I'm saying? The engineer for Steely Dan, you know, rest in peace, man, you know.
Nichols, who passed away in 2011, won 6 Grammys for his work with Steely Dan. He also worked with John Denver, the Beach Boys, Roy Orbison, James Taylor, and many others.
You know, too, like, my mentor, Grammix of DXT, to, like, you know, wow, list goes on and on. Late Paul C., man, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Did you know Paul personally? Or?
Yeah. I knew Paul personally, man. You know what I'm saying? And knew, you know, and it really hurt me when he, the way he got killed around that time.
For more information about Paul McCaskey, a.k.a. Paul C., including about his 1989 murder, listen to Cypher Episode 147 with Anton Pukchansky.
You know, hip hop and rap was really crazy. It was crazy back then. You know what I'm saying? That's it. You know, times Charlie Murata. You know what I mean? It's my dude, Charlie Murata, man. You know.
Producer and engineer Charlie Murata worked with the entire Def Squad, including EPMD, Das FX, and Redman.
What was really crazy is that Charlie. I spoke to Charlie maybe earlier this year. Come on, man, Architect had connected us, and Charlie reminded me. He said, "T, remember you sitting in my studio, man? And I played you Redman. You the first MF'er to hear Redman." I said, "You know, you're right, man." I said, "Word," because he had played me. He says, "Yo, I got this kid, man. You know what I'm saying? Tell me, like, you know what I'm saying? Shopping Def Jam, man. Tell me, he got PMD's camp, man. How he sound." When I first heard Redman, I was like, yo, put him out, man. Yo, he's dope. He's dope, man.
Nice. So when you went back and listened to those records, I was curious from the rapping side of it. Maybe it's just because of the time and everyone kind of sounded a little bit like this, but it sounded a little bit sort of Schoolie D influenced to me.
BS came with making that green. People always say, what the hell does that mean? Leave all the people who can't understand. A one homeboy became a man. As for the way you scream and shout, one by one, I'm not. People, let me tell you, a few years back, I was chilling at home and feeling kind of whack. When I finally discovered what I was supposed to be, was to go around singing in your sucker MCs. Suck.
See, ready for this? See, that's another thing too, man. It's like, it's like, okay. Back then, we drank like, you know, 40 ounces, drank gin, and we smoked dust. You know what I'm saying? So when my shit came out, like, my shit came out before Schoolie.
Actually, TC is a little bit off here. Not surprising, given that we're discussing events of 30 years ago. Schoolie D's influential single, PSK, What Does It Mean?, backed with Gucci Time, came out in 1985. And TC's debut 4-song release came out the following year.
When Schoolie shit dropped, when he dropped PSK, it's like, wow, that shit is dope, yo. Like, it was like, You know what I'm saying? Then and Saturday night. And then like Gucci time, man. Me and Schoolie, that's my brother, man. And like we connected like a few years back, some years ago. You know what I'm saying? I was doing a party called 5 Point Fridays. Five DJs from five categories of music in New York. $5 to get in. You get in free if you got five chicks with you. And we close at 5 in the morning. And all drinks is $5.
Sorry, I missed it.
You know what I mean? It's 5 Point Friday. You got the five bros. 5 Point Friday, man. So it was down in Chinatown. So you know me, you know, I just say yo, you know, man, yo, go ahead. Schoolie, I loved it, man. I loved it. I was like, yo, Schoolie got that, man. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of people said that, man. But that's because, like, you know, I smoked dust and I was drunk in the studio. Play it loud. You know what I'm saying?
And I gotta say, I loved Funky Fresh New England.
People, let me tell you where I come from. Southern New England gonna be number one. So if you ever go there, I know you agree. Funky Fresh New England is the place to be. Coming from New York, the first stop for me is a place called Denver. I go there to see. Homeboys chilling, fly girls willing. To be down, cause I know I'm dealing. Moving right along.
Oh my what? God, what? I hate that fucking record, man. That and Party Pooper.
Times before, always at a party and never on the floor. All you do is come in and hang around, messing with the people who want to get down. Holding up the walls, all you ever do. Why don't you get on the floor and party too? I can't understand you pay your money this way. You always come aside but never party. You never.
Well, I hate that record. I'll tell you why. Because can you play it? And Sucker MCs, I wrote them joints.
Back to a push of a button, the jam will play. And you will call the radio, you will say, can you play it? You can't understand cause your mind is too nimble. You can't understand cause your IQ is zero. You can't understand that you'll never be me. So you have to live your life as a Sucker MC.
Back then, in the 80s, you wrote a side and the label wrote a side. Now, 9 times out of 10, their joints in the B side, you're in the A side. But what they're doing, 9 times out of 10, they're paying the radio DJs to play the B side. With like Party Pooper, I hate that record. But the experimentation, like production wise, We were going places that the average cats in hip hop production and wasn't going back then.
Yeah, you had not on that song, but on one of the other ones, you had like a little vocoder and
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Can you play it? You know what I'm saying? Now, on Party Pooper, which, you know, by the time that record came out, Tony Pearson had wrote that record and he wrote Funky Fresh New England. You know what I mean? Because at that time, when the record came out back then in the 80s, I haven't been in no places in Connecticut. You know what I'm saying? Maybe I've been to Bridgeport or Hartford and shit like that, man, but all the other places, I ain't been there.
Pennsylvania and Maryland will do. Washington and Virginia, you're on my list. Gonna keep on moving.
And with Party Pooper, I just felt like it was like Party Pooper. Burr, 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 burr. But see, if you hit a da-da-da on it,
party with us.
We were like, I walk in the studio, right? And it's this big ass fucking synthesizer, man. This shit's huge, right? I'm like, yo, what's this? And I'm like, yo, it's the Fairlight. So I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, man, totally just worked on that, man, doing On Over Lonely Heart.
Yes's Trevor Horn used a Fairlight sampler on the group's 1983 hit song, Owner of a Lonely Heart, taking the drums from Funk Incorporated's Cool Is Back. No less an authority than Questlove has said that this was the very first use of a sample as a breakbeat.
Just to let you know what era, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I was making records in this. Owner of a Lonely Heart. You know what I'm saying? It's 80s, man. So, you know.
Those were expensive back then.
Yeah, man. This shit was like $100,000, man.
Yeah.
This was big as fuck, man. So I'm like, something? I'm like, yeah, it's a total shit. I mean, so, but can you play it? What influenced me was with that record there was Celluloid Records. You know what I mean? Me and
the French label.
Yeah, well, at that time, by the time, matter of fact, let me just rewind a little bit. By the time me and our RS3, we had broken up. You know what I mean? And me and Tony, you know, I said, you know, fuck it. You know what I mean? I'm going solo, man. You know what I mean? And got myself a DJ, one of the greatest scratch DJs, Puerto Rican DJs. You know what I'm saying?
Doc Scratch,
yeah. Man. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, even working with Tri-State Records, it was like a struggle. Because here it is, like, we are, like, young, and we do this, like, every day. This is what we do. You know, we go to school, from school, I'm at Doc's house, and we there for hours cutting and scratching, and I'm writing raps and all that, man. You know what I'm saying? And routines and all that, you know? And we did a tribute to the Cold Crush as a bonus break, I remember. We did a version of their routine, huh? You know what I'm saying? We're like, you know, Doc is cutting, huh, 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 huh. I'm like, I got to have, huh, huh. And like, you know, that's just like, you know, that's how much, you know, we looked up to our big brothers, man. Like, you know, we gave tributes to like their routines, man. You know what I'm saying? And so when Can You Play It came out, my mother helped me write that record, man. Right?
Wow.
My mom wrote the first, no, I'm a winner, not a loser, an MC abuser.
Microphone king in the world, rap ruler. A rhyme, a cut, is combined with a scratch. It's something funky, fresh for any DJ to catch. A studio design that will rock your mind. With the bass and cymbal combined with rhyme, this product will rock because I've got a heart.
I predict I'm going to be number one in the charts. So my mom wrote that right there, man. Cause back then, man, it's like we were so serious, man, with like just like MCing and DJing or what you want to call just hip hop. But to us it was just like something to do, man. You know what I mean? That every day you could not go to school, man, and hit that cipher, man. You know, that fire pit, man, without your rhymes, man. Mm. And if someone said, nah, you bit that. All you gotta do is at the bottom of it or the back, if you don't got your mom or your dad's signature. Yo, B, you bit that, man. So if your mom co-signed it, it's like, nah, man, his mom co-signed it. That's my, yo, you know, because I wake up every morning, like, before she go to work. I'm like, Mom, you got to sign my rhymes. And she be like, boy, what's this mess you doing? Y'all doing out there? I'm like, Mom, you got to co-sign my rhymes, you know what I'm saying? And like, originally freestyling wasn't off the top of their head. It was like, piecing all together your rhymes. Now it's your freestyle, you know what I'm saying, back then. Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the stuff you were doing a little later on, maybe 10 years after that, you did the Planet 2020 record.
What do you mean?
Coming from the Planet 2020, Afrika Bambaataa, Census, Force Son, TC Islam, the funky alien, because you did not heed the call. I gave you some sonic force, I gave you Shango, but the Force Son, TC Islam, he will drop the bomb.
Which I think, to this day, is still your only full length, right?
Yes.
So first of all, what does the title mean? What is Planet 2020?
To see things more clearly, you know? Once you get to your Planet 2020, you see yourself more clearly.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to thank Dave Stone for Sour Records, who signed me to Sour. I'm the first American B-boy signed to... You know, to record, you know, for so many UK labels and the breakbeat market.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Especially the jungle breakbeat market.
Well, that record is pretty heavy jungle influence.
Yeah, yeah. Real heavy. Matter of fact, you know, Elements of Noise, Producer Track. I'm going back right now, Producer Track, Jungle Jam.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a tech step, you know, as far as tracking.
You feel that lonely place coming down tonight. Let me say transcending. You're from the stars by far. See, yo, back in the days I used to double MC back on Mars. Now you can never double on the dangle. I strangle every whack journalist MC from every damn angle. I'm in the cypher.
You know, and Planet 2020 is not... Well, one crazy thing about that is that I recorded a lot of the vocals in London and also here in New York, in the New York Hotel. And every time I recorded in New York, you know what I'm saying, and every time I recorded in London, You know what I'm saying? I was on shroom tea. I was on mushrooms. When we got to maybe after touchdown 2020, you know, I decided that I wanted to go deeper. My brother, the producer of the tracks, I wanted the album, since it was going to be a double album, I wanted it to be like apocalyptic. I wanted it to be like, you know, as far as music theory wise, I wanted to be just like tighter than Beethoven. You know what I mean? We wanted to bring like musician culture and DJ culture, more breakbeat DJ culture together. Like, what would it sound like if we brought theoretically trained musicians to play some funky shit? You know what I'm saying? And combine that shit with like breakbeat.
Mm-hmm. And what songs did that kind of take shape on?
The Pale Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Subliminal destruction, y'all, with a 9mm my own protection, y'all. As that pale white horse bleeds, grass don't grow in the ghetto, y'all. And why should it? It will only be trampled by the footprints of those who are deaf, dumb, and blind, by the blood of those that they could not see, or blinded by the blood of those.
Aliens on the Run and alienism is the key to abduction, is the key to alienism. Alienism's the key.
See, alienism is yourself from all types of isms that plague the planet Earth, like racism, false education, false religion, egoism, all that, alienism.
Those are my two personal favorites in Yesterday. There's a version of Yesterday with myself, Roots Maneuver, and you know, I compared Yesterday to a subway ride. Riding into the future, and every stop represents the episode of Yesterday.
Yesterday's like a subway train moving, constantly moving, stopping. Each stop represents an episode of yesterday. Yesterday. Yesterday is still moving into the tunnel of the present to reach the future on time, or on time to the future. Future, time, beats, life. If we were,
you know, and Aliens on the Run. You know, I wanted that to be something like I was in more or less like imagining myself sitting on top of a mountain, on top of like a sand dune, man. You know, and I'm just watching utopia, you know, and a place where children can be, you know, where a place where every man has the same as the next man, you know, and that, you know, we're all aliens on the run.
I often have dreams of sitting on top of a mountain, looking down at a place where peace is law, and love and unity reign supreme. A place where every man has the same as the next, y'all. Aliens on the run, y'all. A place where hunger, hate, and oppression is no more. A place where children can grow as children.
And I just wanted to be like that to be the theme music to, you know, just being on the run, man. And they, you know, I can't let them catch me. And who are they? I can't let them catch me. They are the ones, the shadow people. People that want to keep us in the shadows. So we're always an alien on the run from a shadow.
And I'm not exactly sure when this came out, but you did your own version of Chameleon, the Herbie Hancock
thing. Yeah. That's called B-Boy Breakdown. Me and my Ed Solo, my long-time engineer and co-producer as well in the UK, and also the co-architect, you know, of the Hip Steps sound. I'm like, yo, hey, I always wanted to do a tribute to Herbie Hancock, you know, but, you know, when you hear that, you know, wow, wow, ouch, 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 I'm like, oh man, I don't want to sample that, man. I'm like, cause you know, So I'm like, you know, me, Ed and I, we spent like a whole week, man, duplicating that bass line. But we listened to the record so much. I said, you know, Ed, instead of us trying to duplicate the bass line, let's try to duplicate, capture the atmosphere. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The atmosphere around the bass line. So we did that. And then, you know, we listened to the small things, like the whole, the way we're like, you know, the way it was just like, you know, wow, wow. Oh, you know what I'm saying? Instead of just being so staccato, you know what I'm saying? So when we broke into the which I call like the roll, man, just rolling it out, man. You know, we made the bass line very bouncy, man. But you know, that's just my way. Like I said, the whole hip step music style, you know what I'm saying? There's many styles also within the style, like, you know, DJ IQ, you know, another hip stepper.
Who you've collaborated with a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I'm DJ Wally, you know what I'm saying? You know, just to name a few here in New York, you know what I mean? Of the, like I said, like the official, you know, New York hip-step producers in the, you know, here in New York and all that. And, you know, and I saw, like, you know, in breakbeat, especially in jungle breakbeat, I decided, like, in the early 90s to reinvent myself. Cause I love making records. I love just being coming different. Like I make what I like, you know what I'm saying. And if you don't like what I make, hey, that's you. You know what I'm saying. But to be one of the most underrated and considered one of the dopest MCs, you know what I'm saying, and breakbeat like that, it's an honor thing. You know, I thank all the fans like that. But you know, I never read, like, on the internet or, like, magazines what the critics would say about me. So I don't, you know, and I just, like, I don't pay no attention to that. You know, it's like, you know, how word am I? I'm just doing it like this.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Can you talk about rhyming over jungle drum and bass stuff for a minute, specifically from the point of view of tempo? Because those tempos are 160, 170, 180, as opposed to 95 beats per minute of the standard boom bap. They're so much faster.
See, one, these cats, they rhyme over it. Me, I've always been a part of the jungle, and the jungle's been a part of me. You know, a hip-hop pioneer once told me, you got to step to the perfect beat inside you. You got to find your perfect beat. And, you know, it's like me, like I said, I'm a breakbeat B-boy, so I followed the breakbeat. I followed the Amen breakbeat. I followed the Apache breakbeat. I followed Funky Drummer, and it brought me straight to, you know, and seeing that, you know, I come from like a background of, like, you know, sound systems, reggae and reggae music and all that, and hip hop, you know, as far as it seemed, came through that whole era of, like, you know, sound system culture and all that. As a youth, it's just like me and Jungle, we just like locked. It's like, you know, when I first went to England back in the late 80s, you know, I was, you know, hearing, like, the whole, and, like, you know, the, and like, the whole, like, raga, like, reggae scene, you know what I'm saying, the whole, you know, if you want to call it jump up or whatever, you know what I'm saying, but it's the whole raga dance hall and all that. I'm hearing, like, the jungle, even, you know, even in the roots, but it was slow, a lot slower, so I'm going, yo, man, that's hip-hop right there, you know what I mean?
And it literally was the same drum breaks, just sped up or processed or whatever.
For more information about drum breaks and drum and bass, see the short documentary about the history of the so-called Amen break that we'll link to in this episode's show notes at thecyphershow.com.
So I'm going back and forth, you know what I'm saying, to, like, you know, from New York to England all the time, you know what I'm saying? And by that time, me and Jamalski, we had linked up in 91. And so by 94, he had called me and was like, yo, Mac from Giant Step starting Concrete Jungle Night. I'm like, man, that shit gonna be whack, man. You know what I'm saying? Ain't gonna be like, you know what I'm saying? I just got back from England, man. You know, so
and you go on to host it for 17 years or whatever.
Well, you know what's really crazy is that the first one was, but then when we got the wetlands, like it was like SOBs and wetlands. And that was crazy, but we got the Coney Island High, man, and then the Pyramid. And it's crazy because I have been hosting Concrete Jungle for the past, you know, I'll just say 20-something years.
Wow.
And to have a residency. But see, what Concrete Jungle gave me back then is that no one knew that, you know, while you guys is raving and drunk and fucked up with all that, man, you know what I'm saying? I'm actually looking at this as, like, this is my dojo because this is giving me a platform to now formulate a new style. You know what I'm saying? I got something that no other hip-hop MC has. You know what I'm saying? Every Monday night, I'm basically, you know, every or when I'm home, Friday, Thursday, whatever, I'm actually emceeing DJ sets. And it's like, as far as the BPMs, people go, yo, that's fast. I'm like, no, it's not. You know what I'm saying?
Just, do you feel it at half speed, basically?
I just feel the funk. I just feel the soul of it, man. Mm-hmm. It's just feel the frequency of it, man. And it's just, you know, it just, I just locks right into it, man. So, you know, being the first, also the first real jungle drum and bass, you know, North American MC, you know what I'm saying? You know, I wanted to just provide a platform, open a platform. You know, that was my goal, to provide a platform for us in hip-hop and the electronic breakbeat scene, underground scene, and I did that, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I called it, I started calling the style hip-step, you know what I mean? Because we go from hip-hop, y'all come from hip-hop, hip-hop, to hip-step, 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 you know what I mean? And then during that time in the early 90s, like that, I was basically also to educate hip hop back to breakbeat culture. So, you know, big up to my queen sister Bahamadia, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, when we met in New York and she was in the studio and I was telling her about, you know, this whole, like, you know, the whole hip step, I was going to jungle hop at the time. You know what I'm saying? So next thing you know, her sounds changed up. She changed, and I saw some about some years later. She said, "Thank you so much, yo, for introducing me to the jungle, man." Because there's many styles of drum and bass. You know what I mean? And I just felt like, okay, I see the opportunity to, no one's representing hip hop. You know what I'm saying? In jungle, so let me come my New York, you know, American style, because a lot of MCs, which I really would get on their ass, and a lot of them really, you know, can't stand me for it because they try to get away with that bullshit. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, why are you guys trying to sound like you're from the UK and sound like Shabadi, Skibidi, or you over here trying to sound like TC? You know, which is that's an honor to me. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, America, man, and America comes from, you know, two turntables and a microphone, you know, and rap and all that, you know, represent your style. If you're from Denver, Colorado, you don't have to sound like you're from Denver, England, you know what I'm saying? You know, or Denver, Australia, you know, sound like you from, like, you. Yeah. I have cats, man, sound like they straight from Australia or something, man. Get off the mic, be like, hey, what up, homie? I'm like, so, you know, for me, you know, back in the early 90s, I would toast the UK style, you know, saying like cats, like, I'll toast a lot of styles, but I felt like as a hip hop, you know, as a hip hop, hip step jungle MC, mm-hmm. you know, we toast the hip hop. So you hear me, like, you know, I'll be like, TC's chilling, soul singer chilling. What more can I say? Top villain. Well, you know what I'm saying? People are like, yeah, top villain, what are you too? Or like, you know, I'll spit like, yes, the rhythm, the rebel, you know, the hardcore, I'm lower my level. So all the hip hop heads, you know, in the rave, they're like, yeah, no doubt, you know what I'm saying? But a hip step MC is more lethal than a jungle MC, you know what I'm saying? Because a jungle MC would have that speed tongue over a hip-step MC, but at the end of the day, we can do that style. We can also rap. We can also MC a DJ set. You know what I'm saying?
And that whole thing about MCing a DJ set, that's so different than freestyling in a traditional sense or performing a song you've already recorded. Well, you know, but that's that. Rhyming live over a DJ set is something you do a lot, and I think you're in the middle of a book about it, if I'm not mistaken. Can you talk about that?
Well, I won't have to kill you after I tell you this, man. You know what I'm saying? Now, well, I'm in the middle of compiling a book called The Art of MCing a DJ Set.
Right.
Because when you see a MC, a dude on the mic, you see the DJ, you're actually witnessing an art form. You know what I mean? You're actually witnessing the MC navigate you, you know what I'm saying, as the DJ guides you, you know what I mean? And And that's what really makes me, made me stand out out of a lot of other MCs. On top of it, it's also my showmanship. You know what I'm saying? Because I want to bring, you know, like a lot of promoters, a lot of DJs, you know, especially in drum and bass, they want the MC to be like in the back, you know, sit to the side like that. You know what I'm saying? Then like, you know, I felt like, you know, I said it years ago, where it's like, you know, in order for the drum and bass MC to progress, they have to know how to give a stage show. They're gonna have to start putting out records. So I'm like one of the first cats, like MC Det, myself, you know what I'm saying, and a few others that were like the early record making MCs in drum and bass. You know what I mean? Like, and I felt like, you know, if I'm gonna represent New York and represent America, and then, you know, I'm coming also from the hip hop, you know, far as foundation, and I know how to give a show, let me strive to also like pick up the DJ, make sure me and the DJ is like this. Where it's like, yo, you got an MC that can give a performance here. You know what I'm saying? And I always strive to, like, you know, so that, you know, when the day comes, you know, big up to you know, my MC nephews like Armani Rain, big up to like cats like Sharpness, MC Dre, man, Steve Self, MC Dyer, MC, she lives in LA, you know what I'm saying? You know, a lot of DJs need to MC more. You know what I'm saying? A lot of MCs need to DJ more. So that they know, so that they the more that the MC knows the tunes, the more knows the music, The more effective he can be as an MC. You know, you got a lot of these, I call them jibber jaw MCs nowadays. You know, you go to a party and it's like, are we back in 1995? Like, you know, and you know, I just want to see like a lot of the MC side of it just mature a lot more to, like, you know, and what we can get in bigger clubs. And you know, right now, man, you know, we might as well do kind of adult contemporary breakbeat. You know what I'm saying? You know?
Yeah. You know, so I wanted to ask, you know, as I'm walking in your lovely home here in the Bronx, there's a lot of Zulu Nation paraphernalia.
Yes, and I'm a Zulu King, and you see a lot of my art. And then you see a Graffiti Hall of Famer, Sloan, his art as well. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. How did, you know, before we get anything contemporary involving Bam, how did you first meet him?
I met Bam when I was like, wow, maybe 14. It was like Bronx River, like party, like Bronx River Center. You know what I'm saying? And I was always a fan of Bam Bada's activist work. You know what I'm saying? And then I was also a fan of Bam Bada and the Black Spade street work, you know, because I grew up, you know, like under that right there, you know, and you know, when you're a young kid and you out here and you banging too, you know what I'm saying, you know, you have those that you look up to in the street like that, you know what I mean, and Bam was one of those cats, man, you know what I'm saying, musically, you know, when he adopted me as his fourth musical son, because I'm a big electro funk head. You know, my adopted uncle Strafe, you know what I'm saying? You know, I love it all. I grew up on all that, playing all that, Rocker's Revenge, all that.
Rocker's Revenge was a group of studio musicians put together by legendary dance music producer Arthur Baker in 1982. Their biggest hit was a remake of Eddie Grant's Walk It On Sunshine, which hit number one on the U.S. dance chart.
Because at that time, you know, when the black people had pushed the electro to the side, you know what I'm saying, electro funk to the side, the Puerto Ricans were still rocking, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, like Rocker's Revenge, all that, man. So I'm like one of the first cats, you know, really date Spanish girls back in the days, you know what I'm saying. I dated most Spanish, Puerto Rican girls, and Dominican girls when I dated black chicks, man, you know what I mean, so... You know, my kids have, I have a child who's half Puerto Rican, you know, my sons have Colombian, you know what I'm saying? So let you know how deep I'll be in South America.
And so how did you grow close to Bam enough that he sort of became like a surrogate father figure?
Put that work in, you know, for those that about putting that work in, you know, we became a very good friend. This is a very, very touchy subject to me right now.
Of course.
You know, because, it's a lot of things going on that I meditate every day, you know, that just like, you know, just truth just moves forward. But you know, putting that work in, and you know, and I saw like, you know, me, whatever I do, you know, I put my whole heart and soul into it, man, and I ride with it, you know, I ride with you, man, you know, and it wasn't easy, you know, putting the Zulu Nation on my back in the 90s.
How do you mean?
You know, Bam was on the road, Ahmed was working.
The Ahmed here is Ahmed Henderson, who started out in 1973 as one of the founding members of the Zulu Kings, the official b-boy crew of the Zulu Nation. This past May, Henderson was named the head of the Zulu Nation.
Now the founders working in the industry, and you know, someone had to carry the Zulu Nation forward, and me and a few other brothers, you know, and sisters, we, you know, did the best that we could, you know. Man, I give thanks for that, you know, but, it just, I guess, only way I can explain Bambaataa and myself's bond at that time and me growing up was destiny to do what we did together, man, you know what I mean, you know, I never seen any, I mean, we've always known Bam was gay, you know, like anybody else, who cares? You know, but, you know, all these other accusations and all that, you know what I'm saying? You know, well, I never seen, you know, none of that. But I have seen, mad young guys around them, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, in hip hop, you know, and you're in the streets and, you know what I'm saying? And you're, you know, you tend to see that, you know what I mean? If you see in the streets, you see what you're looking for, you get what you seek.
Right.
If you're not looking for it, you don't see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know, I guess not to put too fine a point on it, but after you know the people that have come forward over the past couple months, do you think Bam abused young boys?
Yes, I do. I don't think he abused the young boys. I think that, but he had some type of relationship and sexual relation with them, you know, with the ones that have come forward. You know what I mean? And that has to be proven in a court of law. But the ones that have came forward, they're not gonna lie. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean, that's what really let me know, like, you know, it's fact. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That you did this, man.
And when Ron Savage first came forward, the people who at that point were closest to Bambaataa said, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. How did you react when heard that?
See, all the conspiracy theories, that's that bullshit. You know what I mean? But, you know, speaking very, 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 very hip-steppingly, you know what I mean? I had my doubts when Ron Savage came out at first. You know what I mean? Become like... It was a book thing, you know what I mean, that really, like, you know, he just trying to sell his book, you know, but I know Bee Stinger, you know what I'm saying?
Ronald Bee Stinger Savage first mentioned being sexually abused by an older, respected hip-hop figure in his memoir, Impulse, Urges, and Fantasies, the true untold story of pioneer hip-hop artist liaison Bee Stinger, which was published in September 2014. However, he did not mention Afrika Bambaataa by name. Savage first mentioned Bambaataa's name in the spring of 2016, and after this accusation, multiple more accusations were made by other victims and those with knowledge of victims. Initially, many of Afrika Bambaataa's defenders made this claim about book sales. But once additional victims came forward, this accusation faded.
Don't be seen for many, many, many years. And then, you know, what really had me step up is when they called Hassan Campbell, a police informant.
Hassan Poppy Campbell is another Zulu Nation affiliated man who accused Bambaataa of sexual abuse days after Savage's story became public. In response, the Zulu Nation issued a statement calling Campbell, quote, both a liar and a government-paid police informant.
I'm like, yo, hold up, man. Nah, man, nah. That's my little brother Poppy, man. He ain't a police informant. I even told Ben my last conversation we had. I said, yo, you know he ain't no police informant. Yo, how you know? Because the same way you telling me you didn't do this. You know what you're not telling me. You know, he called me a couple of days after the Daily News article dropped and asked me what I damage control is.
Bam did.
Yes. And matter of fact, this is the first time in media that I'm saying this. You know, the conversation got very heavy. I'm like, look, man, you know, as long as you stand on truth, man, I stand with you. Whether you did it or not, man, I stand with you, man. You know what I'm saying? You know, I'm with you. You know, and the vibe wasn't right. The voice wasn't right. You know what I'm saying? You know somebody for so many decades, man. It's like, yo, you trying to use me here, man? Like, you know, and then, you know, he had to go to Chicago to go play for like, the Zulus out there. But then it's like, you know, he said, I'm going to give you a call back. And that was the last conversation we had.
That was the last time you've spoken to him?
That's when I spoke to him, and that's when he basically decided to turn his back and don't speak to none of us and go on and do his Ed Lover show thing and Fox 5 thing and deny all these people.
Peace and honor to you, brotherhood, and to the queen, Moni Love.
I'm here.
Bam, how you doing, man? There's a lot of stuff happening with you, man. A lot of allegations against you, man. What do you want to say?
I definitely say that this is false allegations that's being put against me, and a lot of lies, and it could be me today and you tomorrow. You know, I completely deny all type of accusation that's being put against your brother, Afrika Bambaataa.
Have you ever abused any underage boy?
I never abused nobody. You know, it just sounds crazy to people to say that here you abused me. You know, my thing is, you know all my people back then. You know the hundreds of people that been around me. You know, if something like that happened, why you never want to? None of them.
And from what I hear, you know what I'm saying, you know, he got a head crossed in his ass. He mad at all of us. Me, I mad at all of us. I'm like, yo, bro, you know, get off your high horse, man. You got no reason to be mad at me for a damn thing, man. You know,
but at a certain point, you were facing death threats from his inner circle.
Well, it wasn't coming from the inner circle because I'm part of grew up around that inner circle. Mm-hmm. But I never even cared about what the inner circle did because I was always doing my thing. And like I told him, my duty is the preservation of the Universal Zulu Nation. That was my sole focus. And my career and my family, you know what I mean? And you know, but I was getting threats from like zealot fans.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? You know,
people who think they're trying to impress him. Or
yeah,
something.
Exactly. Yeah. Them type of people, man. You know, the first 10 threats, man, I was like, whatever, man. You know, that shit started going to 20, 25 and shit. You know
start
what I'm saying?
Start taking it seriously.
Yeah, so I had to break out of town, man, for a hot minute. I'm not scared of shit. It was just best to be safe, man, with something like this, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then the rest of the threats that were coming was geared mostly towards him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that fat faggot guy die or Zulu Nation faggots, you know what I mean? You know, I'm like, you know, and I brushed it off, man. And then I decided, you know what, man, let me get back home, man, and you know, back to the palace and mm-hmm. cook some good food, man. And because, you know, if anybody going to fuck with you, you know, they going to come at you, you know what I mean? But, you know, I'm not worried about that, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm not worried about, you know, him and, you know, Tafik, you know what I'm saying? They calling people. And this is one thing that really bothers me, though, is that they have the audacity to call people and call the members of the Universal Zulu Nation snakes and tell them that they're standing with the enemy and marching with the enemy and all that. First of all, man, you change the 501c3 to a religious status, global status, without letting motherfuckers know. Put everything in your name, now you're getting all these people money. Where's all the dudes' money going to? Where's all the membership money going to? It's going to your pocket, so you could probably just pay whatever bills you feel like you have to pay. But at the end of the day, you got homeless members, but you could put them in taxi rides to your damn fucking house.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so do you consider yourself, as of right now, as of the day we're speaking, still a member of the Zulu Nation?
Shit. Is Barack Obama one of the greatest presidents we've had? Shit, do they got FEMA camps about to open up in Texas? Are we going up under a new world order? Did Putin just kick the Rothschilds out of Russia? You know?
Hmm.
You ever jerked off with the other hand? Of course. I'm a Zulu king forever. That's not going to stop nowhere. And I'm always going to be the proud musical son of Afrika Bambaataa because that's one thing that no one can take away from me and him is our musical connection, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm even now I'm thinking of ways and trying to come up with ways to pull them forward from this. You know what I'm saying? Well, like, look, maybe you guys need to turn, you know, since you guys can't use Universal Zulu Nation because that's a religious organization now and not a social awareness movement, hip-hop awareness movement, maybe you guys need to have the United Zulu Social Club, you know what I'm saying, and get a 501c3, and you guys are still Zulu Nation members, Universal Zulu Nation, but now you guys are under United Zulu Nation Social Club. You know what I mean? Your chapters all around the world, those are social clubs now. You know what I mean? You can still do the same thing, man. You know, it's the stuff of your anniversary, still do what you have to do socially. But you don't have to remarket yourself, man. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, big up to everybody, man, that's supporting and been supporting the Universal Zulu Nation.
As this interview was conducted in July, we wanted to add some more facts and context in to bring the information up to current on the Bambaataa situation as of October 2016. Since Ronald Savage first came forward this past spring with his accusations against Afrika Bambaataa, at least three other men have come forward with claims of abuse against the Zulu Nation founder. Shamsuddin Sharif Ali Bey, a man who claimed to be BAM's bodyguard, said in May that BAM traveled with, quote, hundreds of teenage boys over the years, including many with whom he shared hotel rooms. There is no active investigation of Afrika Bambaataa at this time, because none of the alleged incidents occurred within the statute of limitations on child sexual abuse, which expires when the victim turns 23. Ronald Savage has been lobbying the New York State Assembly to change the law on this issue. As for the Zulu Nation itself, on May 6, 2016, they publicly excommunicated Bambaataa and apologized to the victims. However, this past August, there was a two-hour conference call amongst Zulu Nation leadership, audio of which has been made public. The call included Bambaataa, who offered his thoughts on who should lead the organization. In August, a meeting focused on sexual abuse awareness and victim support was held at Bronx River Houses, where many of the victims grew up. It included members of the Association of Black Psychologists, the National Association of Black Social Workers, and Black Psychiatrists of America. Ronald Savage has launched a new awareness campaign for child sex abuse that he's seeking to have implemented in New York schools. Not to editorialize, but we also felt it necessary to add something here about the concepts of consent, both legal and ethical. Whether or not the boys who participated in acts with Afrika Bambaataa did so of their own volition, by the legal standards of New York State, because they were under the age of 17, they were under the legal age of consent. While some people might debate whether a child of 15 might willingly participate in something with an adult far their senior, it is unquestionable to us that whether or not a child believes they are willing, a person in a position of power should never take advantage of the willingness of a child. A child has neither the experience nor perspective to understand the ramifications of their decisions. The disparate power dynamic is a key tool of the abuser. And frankly, as we've seen in this situation, children are both scared to say no and afraid that they won't be believed.
Yeah. Wow. And, you know, I noticed that in interviews and even in your lyrics sometimes to kind of change the subject a little bit to race, you use the word Uyghur a lot, which is a word that I haven't really heard since probably the early 90s.
Exactly.
And then it was used pejoratively by white people to talk badly about
other white people. Exactly.
That was how it was used in my experience pretty much all the time. Why do you use the word? What does it mean to you?
It don't mean shit to me because, English is not my native tongue. You know what I mean? This is not my native language. You know what I mean? So I'm not English. So this is my, you know, this language that I speak is basically, you know, beaten into my people. You know what I mean? So, you know, the English will say, excuse my French. You know what I mean? Fuck you. I'll just say, excuse my English, kiss my ass. But I heard that. I first heard that, man. It was like the early 90s too, myself, right? And so yeah. It was this girl, and I was this white girl, and she was like, you know, I broke up. She's like, you know that Uyghur right over there. I'm like, Uyghur? What the hell is a Uyghur? And she's like, it's a black nigga. I'm like, no. She says, a white nigga. I'm like, Well, if the word nigger means ignorant person, and that's a Uyghur, so that's an ignorant person, what's the difference? You know what I mean? And so as you travel in the underground and travel this country, you actually see the effects of white supremacy, which created niggerism, you know what I'm saying? And from that niggerism, it created Uyghurism. And, you know, I got a song called This Is For My Niggas and Wiggers That Are Trying To Get Figures And Avoid Them Triggers Trying To Be Long Livers As Oppression Gets Bigger.
This is for my niggas and wiggers that are trying to get figures and avoid them triggers trying to be long livers as oppression gets bigger, as oppression gets bigger, as oppression gets bigger, as oppression gets bigger.
I know my market, man. And in America, there's no way in hell you cannot tell me there ain't niggas and there ain't Uyghurs. Now, the Uyghurs were the descendants of the indentured servants to the crown. Those are what you call your poor white folk. Those are what you call your trailer park right there. You know what I'm saying? And then you had your niggas. You know what I'm saying?
So
who were slaves to the British, to the British crown, mm-hmm. and them and the Wiggers, especially here in the tri-state at one point in time, you know, you had like indentured servants, white servants, and black slaves running away together. Mm-hmm. So what would they say? Damn niggas and Wiggers running together. Yeah.
Okay. So Wigger to you means more poor white than someone white who is like into hip hop or they kind of blur together.
A Wigger and a nigger to me is just two ignorant motherfuckers.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Straight like that.
All right.
You know, there's two ignorant motherfuckers, man.
I dig it. So what, finally, what's going on with TC Islam right now?
Trying to heal, man. I'm really trying to heal, man. I'm really trying to get through this broken heart. You know, feels like, I'll be honest with you, man, this whole Bambada shit's fucked up. Because I feel like I just lost... You know, you just lost one of your best friends, man. Like, I just lost a big homie, man. Like, you know what I mean? And I miss him. You know what I'm saying? I really miss my big homie, man. But can't fuck with him, man. Because it's like, yo, you showed your loyalty. And you turned your back on your family, man. Like, you know, there was that open window, man.
If he had been honest,
and that's the fucked up part about this whole thing is that you had that open window with us, man. But you chose to go stand with Farrakhan. You chose to go be with Ed Lover. You chose to go be with Lisa Evers. When you should have basically stood with these people, man, that's like looking like, yo, man, like he didn't even address us. People that you turned their shit into a religious organization. That you wanted to be their spiritual guide, you didn't guide them. Like for example, who's to say there's not somebody out there that sees Afrika Bambaataa as their spiritual guide? Like, there's a lot of people that see Creflo C. Dollar or Billy Graham or the Pope as their spiritual guide. Well, other people might say, man, fuck the Pope, man. Spiritual guide. I don't see Afrika Bambaataa as my spiritual guide. You know what I mean? Maybe she does. But who am I to say, you know, who am I to judge? That's between them, her God, and the spiritual leader, you know what I mean? But the way he went about it is really fucked up, you know what I'm saying? And with people like me, you know what I mean? That's why I always, you know, now people go, oh, I see why you started the hip-step movement. Yes, when I saw Bam going in a religious direction... Yo, I'm not with that religious shit, man. We're social awareness, hip hop awareness movement. I gotta keep it on those principles. So as I started the hip step, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, that ain't about the Zulu Nation, man. We didn't start hip hop culture. You know what I'm saying? We may have brought the pillars to it, like Muhammad. The Prophet Muhammad didn't start Islam. He just added the five pillars of it because it already existed in some type of Islamism form. So, when hip hop was hip hopism, God considered Kool Herc the father of hip hopism, and I consider Bambaataa like the Prophet Muhammad. You know what I mean? Where he added the five pillars, but the five pillars were already there. The elements were already there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't name these things. These things, he named them from other people that was like saying hip-hop. Oh, that came from Keith Cowboy and Love Book Starsky. You know what I'm saying? You know, the B-boying, you know, the DJing, the MCing. You know, Bambaataa didn't start DJing. He didn't start MCing. You know what I'm saying? But This is a prime example to any culture because we're a hip-hop culture. And that's what I'm saying to my hip-hop culture heads. You know what I mean? From Grandmaster TC is that this is an example of why we do not put each other on pedestals. No one's above anybody in this hip-hop culture. We're all equal because we all do the same thing. You know what I'm saying? You know, just because some of us was on major labels back in the day, mid-size labels, maybe no labels, you know what I mean? Maybe had a job in the industry or so. That doesn't make us any better or bigger than someone who has never experienced that in hip-hop culture. If we've experienced that, then we don't need to point the finger and start like saying, well, that's not hip-hop. That person's not doing hip-hop. Why don't we just shut the fuck up, man, and just teach that person, man? You know what I mean? And that's what TC Islam has been all about, if anybody know me. You know what I mean? It's about that knowledge, man. You know, each one teach one, man. Each one reach one, man. And That's all we say in the hip step, man. It's all about you and what you choose to do with the hip step inside of you. Be you in hip step.
Sounds like a great note to end on, Grandmaster TC Islam. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, man, thank you, man. It's a pleasure to have me on the Cypher. www.hipstepmassive.org. That's the home site. If you want to get any of my music or whatever, just Google me. You know what I'm saying? I like that nowadays. Google me. I mean, you know, and once again, bless up.
When I got the opportunity to speak to TC, my initial thoughts were, of course, of the accusations against Afrika Bambaataa. Those accusations have really rocked hip-hop to its core. Those accusations were, and are, extremely shocking. It's been very difficult to get anyone who was close to Bambaataa to speak about it in public. So I'm glad we got TC not only to comment, but also to tell us how his thinking about the accusations changed over time as more people came forward. Honestly, I was surprised that he told me as much as he did, and I'm really appreciative of it. While this has been difficult for anyone who has been a fan of hip-hop or a part of the culture to deal with, they must hit people who are close to Bambaataa, like TC Islam, extra hard. All in all, I was glad that we got to have this discussion with the Zulu Nation insider, but it's a discussion that all of us who care about hip-hop need to continue having. Join us next week when our guest will be Robert Glasper. Robert is your favorite rapper's favorite keyboard player. He's worked with Fonte, Kanye West, Lupe Fiasco, Jean Grey, Snoop Dogg, Kendrick Lamar, and pretty much everybody else, both on their projects and on his own Grammy-winning albums. In fact, he showed up at Crosstown Studios fresh off a gig at the White House with Common. We'll talk about jazz, hip-hop, and everything in between. Like I said at the beginning, make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to The Cypher on your podcast app of choice. If that app is iTunes, it's hugely important to give us a rating or a review. And don't forget to visit patreon.com/thecyphershow if you enjoy the program and help us out with as little as a dollar a month. If you want to talk to me or Josh about the show, visit us on social media. We're at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. Let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotero.
I smoked dust and I was drunk in the studio.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
Yo, man, yo, man, yo, yo. You want to make a record, man?
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
I make what I like.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
This asshole, ex-cop. Ex-detective who's now locked up, you know what I'm saying, in prison.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter Sean Franklin.
9 times out of 10, they're paying the radio DJs to play the B-side.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.
Let me do this over again, man.
Yeah, yeah. Just,